So Kenneth started our new series last week, and it's about the hallmarks of a follower. And the one we started looking at was humility. And I've entitled this, Humility, Our Daily Prayer. If you'd asked me my definition of humility about a week ago, I would probably have said something along the lines of putting other people's interests ahead of my own, or serving others. But having thought about this passage for a week, I would now say my definition of humility is having a right view of yourself. Where do we get this view of ourselves? Well, I would suggest it's one of two places. Firstly, the world, and secondly, the Word. And the reason that humility is such a challenge is that we're living in a corrupted world and we're not immune from its influences. It's almost impossible to be unaffected by the kingdom of the world. People of the world say, rely on yourself, make your own way, do the best of what you've been given. And they only see the physical, because they're not necessarily living in the spiritual kingdom yet. So they only see what you and I do. And then they build a little hierarchical system for us all to fit into. And it's called the class system. And I don't know if you ever saw the sketch with John Cleese and the two Ronnies. John Cleese, very tall. Ronnie Barker in the middle, Ronnie Corbett at the bottom. And they did this thing about class and who looked down on who and who looked up to who. And Ronnie Corbett, right at the bottom, said, well, all I get is a crick in the neck. All he ever did was look up to other people. So when you meet people for the first time, what happens? Well, the initial conversation is probably around you tell people your name, you describe what you do, and then based on what you do, which is primarily your job, this then attracts a whole load of points. So it's about your earning power, your ability to make money, the fact that the type of job you do probably reflects your intelligence, and it places you in a pecking order of authority and power. And depending on which class you end up in, higher, middle, lower, it gives you a degree of prestige. And you justify your existence by your achievements, which the world recognises. And what are you rewarded with? Well, it might be money, it might be possessions, but mainly it's about the approval of others. So the world decides on a very small subset of criteria what we're worth. They then move on to your family. And further points are awarded depending on how your children are performing at school, what after school clubs they like, whether your parenting skills are up to the mark. And as time goes on, a whole set of expectations surrounds you and your family about how you should conduct yourself based on where you fit in this world system. Then if there's some lapse or unfortunate crisis and the community gets to know about it, well, you often get heralded with, well, you wouldn't expect that from a teacher, a judge, a minister, a librarian, a policeman, a nurse, fill in your own gap. Which is somewhat illogical, because any one of us can succumb to events and circumstances and not perform according to the way everyone else expects us to. So that's the world's view. So how do you get a truthful view of yourself? Well, I would suggest it's by looking at what God says about you in His Word. Because there's no social class in the Bible. all these elements that I've just described are of no value to God. God's not awarding letters to you after your name. And actually, we're all in the same boat if we read the Bible, because we are all sinners. We cannot do, the world wants us to, do anything to justify ourselves, to move us up into a more godly category. So you know the verse in Ephesians that says, our salvation is not by works, lest anyone should boast. This is because God does not look at what you do primarily. He looks at who you are. And how does he know who you are? Well, he reads your heart. The world can't read your heart. The world only sees the effects of what you do and what you say. They cannot read your heart. God reads your heart. And he also looks at who you are relying on. Are you relying on yourself, as the world would suggest is the best way, or are you relying on him? Or are you relying on your own strength? So I think as Christians we can potentially live in an area of compromise or even conflict because of these two expectations, these two views. And if we are taking seriously being a disciple, then we need to look at what God says is important about relying on him. Let's look at the parable, Luke 18. So Luke 18, verse 9 to 14. To some who were confident of their own righteousness and looked down on everybody else, Jesus told them this parable. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee, the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood up and prayed about himself. God, I thank you that I'm not like other men, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like that tax collector. I fast twice a week and I give a tenth of all I get. But the tax collector stood at a distance. He wouldn't even look up to heaven, but beat his breast and said, God, have mercy on me, I'm a sinner. I tell you that this man, rather than the other, went home justified before God. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. So both these men know exactly who they are. Firstly, we have the pious, self-righteous, proud, religious person who knows who he is. And secondly, we have the man that is penitent, unpretentious, needing God's help as he can't help himself. And he also knows who exactly he is. But how can both these perceptions be right? Are they both right? Because we've said that in God's kingdom, this difference doesn't exist. I'm afraid for the purposes of the parable, if you're looking at two groups of people, then we have to put ourselves, probably, in the religious people of the day. Those in the church, that's us. This man was not actually talking with God. He'd come to prayer, but he wasn't talking with God. He was telling God all the things he had done. Keeping the law, not sinning. And he was comparing himself very, very favourably to this other chap. And all he knew about the other chap was that he collected taxes. The pride, as Julia was saying with that balloon illustration, in his achievements actually led to self-deception. A religious man that was spiritually blind. While he was boasting and raising himself up on a pedestal, God didn't hear him. God wasn't even there in the conversation, because the Pharisee wasn't talking to God. The Pharisee was just loudly proclaiming all the things he was good at and what he had done. So what happened? He didn't receive anything from God. He did not receive anything from God, because he didn't have any need of God. He couldn't see anything he'd done wrong. He didn't need God's mercy or grace. He was self-sufficient. And at the end of his prayer time, sadly, although he didn't realise it, because he was spiritually blind, he was not made right with God. His condition before God was unchanged. So maybe one of the challenges for us is to notice that actually sometimes we like being a little exalted. We might start to think and believe that the things we do for God actually do justify us. Has that ever crept into your thinking? It might just make us a bit better than those who have failed when we look around. We've got it right. But we need to let go of that notion, don't we? Otherwise the same thing is going to happen to us. We're going to come out of our prayer closet and we will not be justified. We won't have been made right with God. And the problem is, we're in the world. And what happens is, you get a bit of the dust from the world, don't you, as you're going about your daily life. Probably unavoidable. But this idea of daily prayer and coming into God's presence is where we can ask for this worldly dust, this worldly view, to be removed. So God's looking at our heart, and he's looking as to whether we're relying on him. You know that nice verse in Proverbs, trust in the Lord with all your heart and rely not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he will make straight your paths. But sometimes when you're talking to Christians, the response can be, oh yes, but God has given us a brain and we should use it. Is the subtext to that, yes, I'm a Christian, but in this case I know best. It's so obvious, I don't actually need to hear what God thinks. I just ask him to bless my decision. Is that following God? Is that relying on God? So the world's teaching us to be self-sufficient, and we can easily get that little pull, and we'll put in place our plan just in case God doesn't show up. I think we can probably all identify with this. But God's word teaches us to have a humble dependence on him. So the tax collector, the supposed great sinners of the day, which in the setting where we're putting ourselves in the church, will be all the others outside the church, he was actually living in direct dependence on God. He actually knew who he was. He knew he was a sinner. He knew he had done wrong. He was so repentant and sorrowful that he was actually, as described in the parable, he was beating his breast. He was actually so cut up about what he had done. He knew he needed forgiveness, mercy and grace, which only came from God. And he asked for this, and he received it. So when we go into our prayer closet, and we look at ourselves and get a right view of ourselves, when was the last time you or I were so upset about what we had done wrong that it actually caused us to cry? To actually be that sorrowful and that unhappy with ourselves because of our wrong thoughts or our wrong actions or our wrong behaviour. I was interested to read a little verse in Hebrews, which I know Jesus didn't need forgiveness for sins, he didn't sin. But in Hebrews 5:7 it says, during the days of Jesus' life on earth, he offered up prayers and petitions with fervent cries and tears to the one who could save him from death. And he was heard because of his reverent submission. Now I would suggest, even as the Son of God, he had a right view of himself. He was in reverent submission. And I wonder maybe if that's a challenge for us as we come to pray, whether we are in reverent submission. So God's justice is based on our heart's motives. And we can see from this parable that the Pharisee, the religious people, didn't get anything. And we can see that the tax collector, who identified as a sinner, saw himself as God saw him, in need of forgiveness and mercy. He did receive that. He was justified. And God raised him up. Humility is a right view of ourselves, as described in God's word. And the spin-off of that, which also happens in this parable, is that when we've got a truthful picture of ourselves, we then have a correct picture of other people. So the Pharisee didn't have a correct picture of himself, so he didn't have a correct picture of the tax collector. So the effect of a pious religious person's warped view of themselves leads them to incorrectly look at other people and view others in a very proud and disdainful manner. So you may be saying, oh well, I don't do that. I recognise everything I have comes from God. I realise I'm a sinner. I ask for forgiveness every day for those things that I've done wrong. So maybe that doesn't apply to me. I was thinking about a modern day interpretation of this parable. And someone helpfully has done it for me. A man called Clay Gentry, pretty unusual name. And I'm going to just read you three little scenarios, just for you to reflect on. And then maybe in house group this week, you want to think of your own little scenario that's based on how you think. How the world view creeps up on us. The fit athletic woman and the slightly overweight woman. Two women go to the co-op to do their weekly shopping. One the fit athletic type with a normal BMI and the other who was slightly overweight. As the two women waited in line at the checkout, the fit athletic woman prayed, God, I thank you that I'm not like other women, lazy, unhealthy, poor homemakers, or even like this fat woman in front of me. I work out 3 times a week. I take care of your temple by carefully watching what I eat, and I only feed my family good, healthy food. But the woman who was slightly overweight humbly prayed, God, thank you for all that you provide for me and my family. We don't deserve it. I tell you, this woman went to her house justified, rather than the other one. The homeschool mum and the public school mum. Two mums take their children to the park to play. One is a homeschooling mum, the other a public school mum. As the two women watch their children play together, the homeschooling mum prayed, "God, I thank you that I'm not like other women, selfish, unfit mothers, poor homemakers, or even like this woman who ships her kids off to public school. I raise my own kids, I protect them from worldly influences, and I ensure that my kids have a godly, Bible-based education." But the public school mum humbly prayed, "God, thank you for my children. Please help me be a godly mother." I tell you, this woman left the park justified rather than the other. The professed Christian and the effeminate looking man. Two men go to a fast food restaurant for lunch. One a professed Christian, the other an effeminate looking man. As the two men ate their lunch, the Christian prayed, "God, I thank you that I'm not like other men, irreligious, sexually immoral, or even like that gay looking guy over there. I'm a born-again Christian. I go to church 3 times a week, and I publicly uphold marriage to be between one man and one woman." But the effeminate-looking man quietly prayed to himself, "God, have mercy on me, a sinner. Please lead me in your way." I tell you, this man left the restaurant justified rather than the other. I mean, I think they're very thought-provoking. And I think if we all went away and looked at maybe the times when we had similar thoughts, it could be about anything. It could be about the car you drive, the house you've got, your family. I think that's a pretty good illustration of actually having a distorted view of yourself, and as soon as you get a distorted view of yourself, you get a distorted view of other people. And none of us are immune from this, but we can take these thoughts captive. So we can ask God daily, because this is about prayer daily, isn't it? To ask God to show us if we've got a wrong view of ourselves or of other people. You know, think of the template of the Lord's Prayer. It's a daily check of where we're at. So you might always think, "Lead us not into temptation," is about a specific sin. But could it be, "Lead us not into the ways of the world"? This can easily then result in holding an inflated view of myself based on my own self-sufficiency, and putting others in a less favourable light. So basically, the Bible tells us we're all sinners. No one of us, whether we're sitting in the church or we're outside in the community, is better or worse than another. We all need God's mercy, forgiveness, and to be justified. And that's why I like that last song. We need to be thankful each day for the grace that He's brought out in our lives, and for so many things that He's blessed us with, to use in His service and not as a trophy just for ourselves. So humility, having a right view of yourself, relying on God and in all your ways acknowledging Him. And let us be like the tax collector, the sinner. He was prayerful. He was full of prayer all day, and thankfulness. Kenneth talked about car being in max red and needing to go up a gear. Do you need to go up a gear? It's a choice, only you can change the gear. Humility is a hallmark of a disciple, and in Colossians 3 it says, let us clothe ourselves, which implies daily to me, with humility. And just to end with the verse from Micah, chapter 6, verse 8. And what does the Lord require of you? To act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God.